I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, we will hear from the Democratic candidate who will face off against Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker in June's closely watched recall election. Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett joins us in just a few minutes. But first, we turn to the always emotional, often explosive issue of same-sex marriage. In a move that came as a shock to many people, President Obama announced yesterday that he supports, that he personally supports gay marriage in an interview with ABC's Robin Roberts. Here's a clip from the full interview that aired this morning on Good Morning America.
At a certain point, I've just concluded that for me personally, it is important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married.
Although many people have long suspected that the president has been sympathetic to same-sex marriage, he has said in the past that he supports civil rights for same-gender-loving couples, but he said that his views on marriage are evolving. But that unequivocal declaration puts President Obama at odds with the presumptive GOP nominee, Mitt Romney. This is a clip from Romney's Wednesday afternoon interview on KDVR-TV in Denver. Let's listen.
I do not favor marriage between people of the same gender, and I don't favor civil unions if they're identical to marriage other than by name.
That discussion, along with North Carolina's vote on Tuesday to ban same-sex unions in the state constitution, has put the issue back on the top of the political agenda. And it also turns a spotlight on the role faith might be playing in the presidential race. So we wanted to talk about this with two journalists who cover the intersection of faith and politics. Sarah Posner is the senior editor of Religion Dispatches. That is an online publication that covers religion, politics, and culture from a progressive perspective. She's also the author of God's Prophets, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values Voters. Also with us once again, David Brody. He is the chief political correspondent for the Christian Broadcasting Network that was founded, of course, by the conservative evangelical leader, the Reverend Pat Robertson. He is the author of the forthcoming book, The T-Evangelicals, the inside story of how evangelicals, the Tea Party, and presidential contenders are trying to take back America. Welcome to you both. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thanks
once again.
Thanks for having us,
Thanks,
Michelle.
Sarah, I'm going to start with you. Why now? Why do you think the president made this announcement now?
Well, I think that it was becoming evident that he needed to do something. He was being boxed in by his own position of saying that he was evolving. Yet all around him, other Democrats, including his own vice president, were saying that they were for same-sex marriage. And to continue to say that he was opposed to it in the face of public opinion and even in the face of elite opinion was making him look behind the curve.
David, I want to ask you about why as well. And also want to mention in your column about this, you said, this comes as no surprise, quoting here, you say that the fact that the president's views were evolving, and you had that in quotes, on this for a couple of years simply was code for, let me figure out when best to drop the bombshell. When Vice President Biden seemed to take care of the timing on all that with his appearance on Meet the Press this past Sunday, watching Jay Carney, that's his press secretary, duck incoming fire didn't help.
Right.
That's your usual stuff. But you know what about Sarah's point is that Pew Research polls, for example, from this year, say that even a majority of independents are in favor of same-sex marriage. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to wait to see how this plays out. I mean, 57%, I think, of independents favor same-sex marriage. If you go deep inside those polls, though, a lot of those rural counties, as it relates to independents, don't agree with same-sex marriage whatsoever. I mean, so I think we wait and see how this plays out. As for the timing of it, all of this, I totally agree with Sarah. And just to say that, look, did the president want to announce this on a Wednesday by calling Robin Roberts over to the White House to make this announcement? No, of course not. You know, this was relatively bungled, but done as best possible under the circumstances.
Why was it bungled? Bungled how? You think he was boxed in? He was, in fact, boxed in by Vice President Biden? Because some are saying that, in fact, that he was, in fact, testing the waters. It's kind of like sending up the trial balloon.
Yeah, it was becoming a negative media story for the president. Jay Carney really looking like he was dodging bullets there in the White House briefing room. The vice president, as I like to say, stepped in it, as we shall say, on Sunday. Not the first time, I might say that he did that. So, I mean, it just was not there to tee up properly, and it seemed a little like a rush job.
What is changed by this, David?
Well, I think we're going to find out. But I think what's going to happen is you're going to see a looser electoral map now. In other words, how to get to 270 electoral votes in 2012. All of a sudden, a lot of red states, typical red states that Obama won in 2008, North Carolina, Indiana, Virginia, Iowa, I can go on.
But tell me why you think that.
But those states, because they are typically, they will typically lean a little bit more red. They're purple states, but they are kind of red leaning, at least in the past. All of a sudden, that opens it up for Mitt Romney to do much better in those states than previously, potentially. So we'll see.
But why do you think that, given that everybody says that people are saying that the economy is number one? I mean, that clearly socially conservative voters preferred other Republican nominees like Rick Santorum. But in the end of the day, it went to Mitt Romney because I think the consensus was that people figured the economy was the issue and he was the best candidate on that issue.
Well, I think the demographics, it depends on each state. But I mean, for example, there's going to be problems, and we'll maybe talk about it within the black community, obviously. That's going to be an issue, not to mention some of the rural counties. And quite frankly, if you look within the independent polling, you will not just see it just be 57% of independents approve of same-sex marriage. Actually, if you look at that socially conservative independent vote, which is what President Obama needs in places like Pennsylvania and others, that has been a problem for him in the past, and it could be even more of a problem in the future.
We're talking about President Obama's announcement that he personally supports same-sex marriage. We're talking with people who spend a lot of time thinking about and writing about the intersection of faith and politics. David Brody is with the Christian Broadcasting Network. That's who is speaking just now. Sarah Posner is also with us of Religion Dispatches. So, Sarah, what about David's point? Two key portions of the president's constituency, the progressive coalition, if you want to call it that, African-Americans and Latinos, otherwise strong supporters of the president.
Right.
But on this issue, there tends to be at variance with the perspective of other people within the progressive coalition. They tend to be much more skeptical of same-sex marriage than white liberals are.
Right. Well, a couple of things on that. One is the demographics on that are changing. When you look at the viewpoint of millennial African-Americans and millennial Latinos on same-sex marriage, they're much more in favor of it than their elders are. The second is how much this statement that Obama made yesterday will actually impact their vote when they're looking at Obama versus Romney and issues of the economy or foreign policy or the other unemployment, other things that might be mattering to them right now. Are they really going to change their vote based exclusively on Obama's stated position on same-sex marriage? And I think there's not a lot of evidence that that's the case. And I also think that once people start to realize what the strategy has been of the conservative Christian organizations who are opposed to same-sex marriage. The recent revelation that the National Organization for Marriage had a strategy of trying to drive a wedge between Democrats and Latino and African-American supporters over this issue, that might give them pause about the motivation of the anti-same-sex marriage movement if they think that they're being used to drive a wedge between their community and the Democratic Party.
David? Well, let me just make a couple points. First of all, I think this actually could really very much not just energize the president's base, but he really needs those younger, under 30, those millennials to turn out. And so clearly this has political benefit. Obviously, has a lot of political risk as well. But the truth of the matter is that the problem here, and this is why I think Obama, the advantage is with Obama on this, is because candidate Romney isn't the type of candidate that's going to really make this an issue. I mean, he wants to run away from this issue. I mean, look what happened today. Their press people put out this, what's going on in the world today in Romney land, and not same-sex marriage, and the president's announcement wasn't mentioned at all. President Romney, not exactly.
Presumptive Republican nominee.
I've been reading too many Republican talking points, I think. But candidate Romney does not want to touch this issue. And because he doesn't want to touch this issue, I think it makes much harder to basically get some political hay out of this in many of these swing states.
Well, what about the fact that you've also written about the fact that presumptive GOP nominee is speaking at Liberty University this Saturday. He's offering an address there. You felt that this was an important sign. Tell us why.
Sure.
Will he talk about it there?
Well, talk about what? It depends.
It's gay marriage.
No, I don't anticipate that to be at all brought up. And once again, why won't it be brought up? Because Romney is a Mr. Fix-It, the economy, the economy, the economy. It's all he wants to talk about. And so he doesn't want to get down into the social issues. And so that's the reason he won't do that there. But at Liberty University, real quick, no. I mean, he's going to talk about the budget and immorality, and he's going to appeal to evangelicals from an economic standpoint.
So our final thought I wanted to ask you about, the president in his Good Morning America interview, the president said that his faith brought him to this decision. But he also previously cited his faith when he talked about his support for traditional marriage and why he wasn't really ready to go all the way there.
Right.
I just wanted to ask, what do you think it means for the president to invoke his faith when expressing support for same-sex marriage?
I think it's a very important moment for the president politically in terms of how he relates his faith to his policies, and also in terms of how politically, how he has tried to reach religious voters. During the 08 campaign and throughout most of his first term, he has employed this conservative religious rhetoric about traditional marriage and marriage being between one man and one woman, and resorting to that sort of talking point instead of the sort of talking point that he used yesterday, which was about the golden rule and everybody being treated equally. And so I think that that's a very important message, considering that he has in the past not really reached out to religious leaders who are pro-gay marriage and has tended to try to make public appearances with people like Rick Warren or Jill Hunter who are opposed to same-sex marriage. So I think it's an important – politically – an important message that he's trying to send with regard to his faith outreach and his faith alliances.
Sarah Posner is the senior editor of Religion Dispatches. That's an online publication that covers religion, politics, and culture from a progressive perspective. Also with us, David Brody. He is the chief political correspondent for the Christian Broadcasting Network that was founded by the evangelical leader, the Reverend Pat Robertson, and author of a forthcoming book called The T-Evangelicals. Thank you both so much for joining us here
Thanks,
in our
Michelle.
Studios in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Michelle.
And we're going to continue this conversation tomorrow by taking a closer look at how President Obama's announcement will affect the Black community.
Yesterday on Morning Edition, we heard from a Colorado voter who's opposed to gay marriage.
I'm not really religious, but I believe in the Bible, and in the Bible it states, you know, a man and a woman.
And many Americans share that sentiment, citing the Bible as the reason. Then again, President Obama also cited the Bible in favor of gay marriage.
The thing, you know, at root that we think about is not only Christ sacrificing himself on our behalf, but it's also the golden rule, you know, treat others the way you'd want to be treated.
The president there is citing a statement attributed to Jesus in the Gospels of Matthew and Luke. NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty has been asking how people draw such different meanings from the same book.
It's true, says Carmen Fowler LaBerge. You can be a Christian and support same-sex marriage. But she says,
nobody can say gay marriage is biblical. That's just foolishness.
LaBerge resigned her post as minister in the Presbyterian Church USA after the denomination voted last year to ordain non-celibate gay clergy. She says the Bible is clear.
From the Old Testament and throughout the New Testament, the only sexual relationships that are affirmed in Scripture are those in the context of marriage between one man and one woman.
Well, the Old Testament does condone polygamy. Still, LaBerge says, from Leviticus to Paul's writings in Romans and 1 Corinthians, homosexual acts are called vile and detestable, and legalizing same-sex relationships does not change the sin. Not so fast, says Reverend Susan Russell, an Episcopal priest at All Saints Church in Pasadena, California. She takes her cues from Jesus.
Jesus never said a single word about anything even remotely connected to homosexuality.
Jesus does say the most important commandments are love God and love your neighbor as yourself. And given that, Russell believes if Jesus were here today, he would celebrate committed same-sex relationships. She says you take the Bible literally at your folly.
When you read the Bible, you can find justification for almost anything, including slavery, the subjection of women, and an argument that the sun actually revolves around the earth.
Russell and other liberal Christians argue the Bible is the living word of God, and much like the U.S. Constitution, needs to be interpreted as society changes. But Carmen LaBerge says the issue is which has more sway, the Bible or culture?
There's a stream of faith that would recognize that the Bible continues to have authority and that we are obligated to submit ourselves and our wills, our desires to it. And there's a stream of faith that would say that human experience actually trumps or is an authority over the Bible at this point.
Homosexual behavior is a fault line splitting Christian denominations in two. Episcopalians, Methodists, Presbyterians, Catholics. There's even a wide gulf between young and old evangelicals. But nowhere is this question more fraught than in African American churches, says Tony Evans. He pastors the 9,000-member Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship in Dallas. One reason, he says, is cultural.
The breakdown of the family is the single greatest challenge that we face today.
Evans and others say the black family is in crisis. A majority of babies, for example, are born to single mothers. And that's why black ministers are often the most vocal opponents of same-sex marriage. Asked about the argument that this is a civil rights issue, Evans bristles.
The issue of race is not an issue of choice. It's an issue of birth.
Does that mean that homosexuality is a choice?
The Bible is clear on that one, too, and that is sexual relationships are to be between men and women within the context of marriage. That's not only related to the issue of homosexuality, but adultery or fornication or bestiality. I mean, all of that is prescribed in the Bible.
Of course, it's a civil rights issue.
Graylin Hagler, the pastor of Plymouth Congregational United Church of Christ in Washington, notes that there are plenty of blacks who are gay, and they too should have access to that God-given institution, marriage. To Hagler, legitimizing marriage for committed gay couples is precisely what the Bible envisioned.
I just think of the words from Galatians where it says, "There is neither Greek nor Jew, male nor female, slave nor free." And what is happening there is that they're pointing to what the kingdom of God looks like, is that it's open to everybody and everybody has equal status.
Of course, conservatives say that the best blueprint for God's kingdom on earth does not spring from what you read between the lines of the Bible, but what you read in black and white. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Audie Cornish. We're kicking off this hour with politics. In a few minutes, we'll explore some big ideas that came up this week in the presidential campaign. First, a look ahead to tomorrow. Mitt Romney delivers the commencement address at the country's largest evangelical university, Liberty University. Nearly 35,000 people are expected to attend. It gives Romney a chance to appeal to a constituency that's been described as lukewarm towards him. As NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty reports, the speech couldn't come at a better time.
Last fall, Pastor Robert Jeffress created a huge stir when he said publicly that Mitt Romney, who's Mormon, is a member of a religious cult and a, quote, conservative out of convenience. But today, Jeffress, who's senior pastor of First Baptist Church of Dallas, says he's fully behind Romney.
I think there's a realization among Christians that Jesus isn't on the ballot this year. And so, I mean, many times, voting is voting for the lesser of two evils.
This week, he says President Obama shifted the balance dramatically when he announced that he supports same-sex marriage.
This has brought a new dynamic into the election, and it really is a gift to Governor Romney from President Obama.
Even before Mr. Obama's statement, evangelicals favored Romney over the president by 3-1, chiefly because they so dislike the president. But can Romney turn that antipathy into enthusiasm for his own candidacy? Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council, says to win the election, Romney will have to not just satisfy evangelicals, but thrill them.
Social conservative voters in this election are not going to stay home. But the question is, when they drive to the polls, will they be driving a Suburban that's packed with friends and neighbors that they influence, or will they be driving themselves in a so-called smart car?
That's the question facing the faithful at First Baptist Church of Dallas, Robert Jeffress's 10,000-member megachurch. Every person interviewed said Romney was their second, third, or fourth choice. They're wary of him because, they say, he belongs to a religious cult. He was once pro-choice. And they incorrectly associate him with gay marriage becoming legal in Massachusetts. Roy Sparkman, a former district judge, is typical.
I was open to Michelle Bachmann. I was open to Rick Santorum, Rick Perry, those guys that I thought came out of that more conservative base. But now that we're here, I'm going to be a Romney supporter.
Vera Strickland, a homemaker, says she's alarmed that millions of Christians stayed home rather than vote for John McCain in 2008.
This is a call to arms. It's a wake-up call to Christians that whether or not we like the choices, we must make a choice. And people need to wake up and realize, if you want freedom, go vote.
Yet Mark LaVorne has some residual distrust about Romney's commitment to conservative causes like traditional marriage and opposition to abortion.
Mitt Romney is very smooth, very calculated. Some would even describe him that way to a fault. And I think he has some distance to go to convince the evangelical that he is genuine, that he is sincere in these issues that he states.
Romney may have the chance to do just that this weekend when he gives the commencement address at Liberty University.
Governor Romney has a golden opportunity to make peace with evangelical Christians.
Pastor Robert Jeffress says Romney can hammer home the culture war theme so dear to religious conservatives, but he warns,
I think if Governor Romney simply punts on this and says, well, I'm going to focus on the economy and jobs and leave all this other stuff alone, I think he is going to absolutely squander this tremendous opportunity.
Mitt Romney has an advantage over John McCain in 2008, says political scientist John Green at the University of Akron. Back then, evangelicals did not know how much they disliked Barack Obama. Now they do. Yet Green notes that evangelicals need Romney as much as Romney needs them if they want to have an influence in a Romney administration. And so far, they've snubbed him.
Evangelical voters essentially backed other candidates in the primaries. So they need to mend some fences and strengthen their ties with him. But of course, the nominee will need them in the fall, and he's got to find ways to strengthen his relationship with them as well.
And the next 6 months will tell how rocky or solid is this unlikely courtship. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Rachel Martin. On the same day that President Obama announced that he's had a change of heart and now publicly supports same-sex marriage, there were quieter moves on Capitol Hill to protect the rights of some who do not. On Wednesday, the House Armed Services Committee passed its version of a bill designed in part to protect military chaplains from coming under pressure to marry service members of the same sex. This latest move, which could face strong opposition in the Senate, comes as a response to concerns expressed by chaplains that their own beliefs are being compromised. Joining me in the studio to discuss the issue further is retired Army Chaplain Douglas E. Lee. He belongs to the Presbyterian Church in America and is a spokesperson for the Chaplain Alliance for Religious Liberty. Mr. Lee, thanks so much for coming in.
Great to be here. Thank you for asking.
So first, we should start off by saying that it's really the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell last year that's brought this issue to the fore. That was the policy banning gays from serving openly in the military. Now they can serve openly. What has been the impact on chaplains? What has that meant for the chaplaincy?
Here's the way I describe it. Chaplains can continue to serve their faith group with freedom and boldness and under the First Amendment, which is good. But there are things bubbling behind the scenes and at lower levels that often are not noticed by the community and by America and by leaders in the military.
Because when the debate was happening, it was really the chaplains that raised a lot of concerns about what repeal would mean for them.
Absolutely.
Can you reiterate, what were those concerns?
Well, you might know or recall, not just chaplains, but other organizations across the country began to equate the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell with consequential religious liberty issues along the way. That were this particular behavior to be recognized in the military that way, that there would eventually be challenges to what chaplains could or could not say in their ministry.
In frank terms, we're talking about chaplains being put in a position where they would feel that they couldn't express their concern.
Correct.
That homosexuality is a sin.
Correct. And you have to understand that the majority of the denominations and faith groups that are in the military, you know, from Orthodox Jews, Muslims, Greek Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, majority of Protestants, Roman Catholic Church. I mean, they're all from traditions that hold that homosexuality is a sin. And so the question is then, well, will chaplains continue to be able to speak that way?
So we heard the president come out last week and express his personal opinion about same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm.
But this is far from policy. The Pentagon has come out and said that when it comes to chaplains, they're not required to marry same-sex couples.
That is true.
So what are their concerns among
the concern of some of the congressmen, there are quite a few senators and congressmen that are thinking about this, and that's part of the reason some of these bills have come before the committees this last week and so on. And so Congress is the only group that can help make sure that liberty remains out there. The military just responds to the civilian authorities. And so they salute, they say, someone tells them what the policy is from on high, and they salute and say, we'll implement it. And that's what's happened here.
Doug Lee is a retired Army chaplain and member of the Chaplain Alliance for Religious Liberty. He joined us in our studio in Washington. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.